Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roy on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we're going to attempt to blow the doors off in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well then, our dreams of a Wembley final have been scuppered for another year as our injury-depleted side couldn't overcome a resolute Wolves at Molineux last night. It was a similar story at the Amex last Saturday as Everton's low block and set-piece prowess saw to it that we needed an injury-time equaliser from the skipper to rescue a point. It's a good job we're up against a forward-thinking, attacking Fulham side on Saturday then. Oh, hang on. Perhaps a trip to Rome will sharpen the players' minds. Yes, that's right, we're heading to Stadio Olimpico to face Daniele De Rossi's improving Roma next Thursday night in the much-anticipated Europa League round of 16 first leg. However, we're going to have to go there without Karim Mitoma, who looked to be out for the season. The good news is, though, that Julio Enciso is back, and he looks like he's already back up to speed. As is Valentin Barco, who impressed on his debut against Wolves. Joining me tonight is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome a Raw Virgin in the shape of Monica Fletcher OBE. And we're also delighted to welcome back the one and only Nicky Bandini, who is an Italian football expert and resident of Brighton. So welcome, everyone. It's lovely to see you all. It's been a bit of a weird week on the pitch, but off the pitch, we've got Rome to look forward to.
Ada, can I just point out one piece of pedantry? Because you know how much I love pedantry.
You do love pedantry, yeah.
The Italian job was in Turin, not Rome. Right, let me just start by saying, Monica, hi, welcome to the Albion Raw. I think I was bamboozled by one, your holiday photos / football photos of you in Marseille and in Amsterdam and in Athens, and they were all lovely photos, and even more bamboozled by the number of letters after your name. So do you want to give us a quick rundown? This is what we have with, as AD puts it, Raw Virgins. Give us your Albion supporting history as much as you can remember.
Oh my goodness. Now you see, this is where brains work differently as women. So, okay, and men. So, Venus and Mars, here we go. I went to the Goldstone Ground when I was about 9 with my dad, okay? And I think when I was chatting to you before, Alan, you said, what was the game? I said, I don't remember the game. But what I do remember is standing in the terrace. I can remember everything about the people around me. I can remember being loads of men, hardly any women. I can remember it pouring a rain on the chicken run. I can remember the smell of beer and cigarettes. I can remember the turnstiles. I can't remember the game. And that was it. I came away and I thought, my goodness, what is this all about? Men shouting on a Saturday afternoon, behaving badly, hardly any women around them, a small child. And I thought, I love it. What is this all about? And after that, I was hooked.
Did we play in black and white in those days?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think we did. Certainly when I got home. I mean,
do you recall any players? I mean, do you recall the kit? Do you remind? I mean, well, you're saying that you were in the chicken run. So does that mean that you sort of climb the steps and you're at the top of the East Stand and you look over the rest of this ground in wonderment and awe?
Well, I recognise it. I was trying to work out how old I was. But, I mean, I can't remember. I'll tell you when the first game I really, really do remember was going away at Fratton Park. And that was an experience. So I can remember my first away game going to Pompey, but I can't remember my first. But, I mean, then it became part of my life. I mean, the players I remember were the two Napiers, Kitty Napier. We got Kitty. I mean, I can remember the team quite well, but I just don't remember my first game. Whereas I think blokes would do, wouldn't you? And you'd remember
yes.
the score.
And we make a point of doing so.
Well, Nicky would delight that my first game was actually against Arsenal. So it was like... It was November the 2nd, 1980, if you must know. But it was, I can tell you the teams.
September the 8th, 1978. I remember this. But if you're going to say Kit Napier, then that makes it at least before 1972.
Well, this is right. Come on, lads. You're a bit younger than me.
Yeah, but to be fair, there's any time between 66 and 72. And that's really not fair from our point of view. Did you say also you remember John Templeman?
I do. I remember John Templeman. I really like John Templeman. And I remember, oh my goodness. I go back and I think about it. And, there was Willie Irvine, We are thine, all right. We are thine. Eddie Spirit.
I think we are spirit, yeah. In that case. Well, I think we're zeroing in on about 71, 72 here.
Let's okay. Turn this around, mate. If I gave you the team, you've got to guess where it was. I can tell you, it was Pat Sayward was our manager. How about that? I mean, we're
okay, good. Well, Pat Sayward was the manager who got us up in 72. finished second in the old third division behind Aston Villa. Okay, well, if we can't remember that, then at the very least, okay, we've zeroed it in. We're on about 52, 53 years of you supporting the Albion. So in that time... And there's not that many to choose from, but A, who was your favourite player in that time? And B, who do you think was the best Albion player?
I think you've got to be careful on this, though. You've got to be really careful because actually, you know, your brain goes, I mean, like I can't remember then, can I? So, okay, you one automatically tunes into most recent years, and that's really pretty tough because, you know, you can go around and say, oh, at a certain time it was perhaps Zamora or perhaps it was... I don't know, a peace award or whatever. I mean, you tune into it, but actually, who do you really think were the best players? Unfortunately, I think we tend to like get, because we're getting better and better and better in the context of where you're playing, surely our best players are those that we see now in the last 5 years. So, I mean, you can play out of context and you can say, oh, yeah, you know, in 1950, whatever, I reckon it was, yeah. You know, Bert Bloggs. But I mean, come on, I don't know how you do this, really.
So, what's the answer? As answers go, Monica, you'll make a fantastic politician. Thanks for skipping that one beautifully.
Yeah. I mean, I think basically you're trying to make an argument that Pascal Grace is better than Mark Lawrence, and that's a good argument to have. But
no, there is another reason.
We will come to that in a minute. But first, let's look forward to next Thursday. Now, Nikki, obviously... we're excited about it, but what's the mood in Rome about this one? Are Brighton, anything to be feared in Italy?
Oh, I think there's excitement about this one in Italy because it's Deserbi, because it's a homecoming, because this is one of the Italian, I don't know if I can call him a prodigal son, but he's one of the ones who left to go and prove his point somewhere else and did. And everyone wants to see how he's getting on. And separate to that, you have the story of Daniele De Rossi at Roma, who is... absolutely captured everyone's imagination very, very quickly. I think he had an incredibly tough act to follow with Jose Mourinho because we all have our own stiff opinions on Jose.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And let me tell you, on the journalist side, there's like certain people in journalism, in football journalism, where if your story has anything to do with them, you know you're going to get more feedback than you normally get. And anything that mentions Jose Mourinho in good or in bad, you're going to get more feedback. There's a category of online Jose Mourinho supporters who are waiting to either laud you for saying anything nice about him or jump down your throat for saying anything that could be perceived as critical of him. But he was very popular in Rome. He did play a huge part in that stadium selling out for two seasons straight, which hadn't happened in forever. And even though he cut this very grumpy and I don't know, starting fires figure there, especially towards the end, he still hadn't lost that completely. And for anyone else to step into those shoes afterwards was going to be difficult. But Daniele De Rossi is a former club captain. He was always Capitan Futuro, actually the future captain, the one who was going to replace Francesco Totti. He's a fan. He would be on the Cordova if he hadn't played for them. In fact, he was going to games. Just recently before he was hired. So he had leeway right away, but I think nobody expected him with almost no club management experience, one very short, completely disastrous spell with Spal in Serie B. No one expected him to come in and actually start winning, but they have. They've won 5 out of 6 league games since he took over.
It was the only loss, winter, wasn't it? Who were the leaders?
Right. The only loss was to Inter, who are absolutely blowing everyone away, and even in that game Rommel were leading at half time, and they got through the Europa League game against Feyenoord as well. So there's a big buzz around what's happening there with him, and there's also excitement about De Zerbi for sure. De Zerbi is absolutely going to be a homecoming story in Italy when he's there.
I mean, because when you came onto to the Albion Raw, you lightened our airways 18 months ago when De Zerbi originally turned up. It was a different story that you were telling, because one, De Zerbi was unknown here. He wasn't massively known in Italy at the time. I mean, he was sort of seen as having done well with Sassuolo. And there was obviously a lot of people in Italy who weren't necessarily familiar with the Brighton story. Fast forward 18 months, we've got this stratospheric rise that De Zerbi has, and I'm going to be fair to this, been leapt on from what I think Graham Potter started, but De Zerbi's taken it certainly to another level, to the point that obviously he is now an understood and known person in Italy. I went to Italy on holiday last year to just north of Rome. And I, you know, when people say, you know, you like football, I support Brighton. Ah, Roberto De Zerbi, he's known in Italy. So how has his rise, albeit in a different country to Italy, how has that been viewed by, well, A, the Italian press, but B, Italian football fans generally?
Very positively. And I think Italian nationalism everywhere is, I suppose, fascinating, sometimes horrific. But I do think, like, the way that Italians celebrate sporting nationalism is really interesting, because I think that Italy can be fiercely regional. And you see this, there's this word campanilismo in Italian, which literally means sort of like faith to the local bell tower. And you see it even within like towns and cities, these rivalries, obviously the big football ones like Lazio and Roma. But even within a town like Florence, which only has one football club, they still have this annual competition, Calcio Fiorentino, which is Florentine football, which is actually something cross between rugby and mixed martial arts. And
we are very familiar with this.
Can I cut it then, Nikki? As a good friend of ours, Louis, made a film of this about 4 or 5. Still has not seen the light of day, but I've seen the rushes. It's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a blood sport. It's terrifying. I've covered it for ESPN one time as a explainer for them. It's really violent. But for that, the city is split into 4 quarters, and you get this real sense of loyalty to the quarter of the city that you're rooting for, and people hold those things. But there is this thing that, I don't know, I grew up in this half Italian, half English household, and I know that my dad, anytime there was an Italian doing something that was being noticed in England, he was incredibly proud of this, and this was part of his national identity. And I think that is something I see in Italians a lot. As soon as someone goes abroad and makes themselves known, they get that recognition domestically. And I think that the Premier League in particular has a certain romantic appeal in Italy that perhaps even would surprise people in England, because I know that a lot of people in England of the right generations grew up watching Italian football on Channel 4 and thinking, wow, this is absolutely the pinnacle. Yeah. But for some time now, Italian football has looked enviously at English football and all the money and gone, well, how are we supposed to beat that? And then obviously whenever Italy do beat England, like in the Euros, they go, look how brilliant we are. Of course we're going to beat them because we're Italian.
Okay. Monica?
Yeah, Nikki, I heard that they're supposed to be mates. Is this true with such rivalry? I mean, what's the relationship between these two guys then?
Yeah, so their daughters have struck up a friendship through the Roma fan club in England. So they actually have got some personal connections. I think it's going to be very warm. I think you have to sort of think about the Italian coaching fraternity in general as quite close, because basically every Italian professional football coach, whether they played or not, goes through the same finishing school, the same place to go and get their UEFA badges. At Coverciano, which is, I mean, it's an extraordinary facility. It really is something else. That's a whole story of its own. But so they all go through the same steps. They all go through the same courses. They all publish their thesis and have it stored in the library at Coverciano. So so there is a lot of close interconnection. And yes, I think that De Zerbi and De Rossi, probably not just in coincidental terms, but also I think they probably, from my impression of De Rossi's football so far, they actually have quite similar ideas about the kind of football they enjoy and like to see.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, when we spoke to you before, you were saying that De Zerbi's football, his style of football, isn't very Italian. It's like very much on the front foot, leave the back door open, we're going to beat you 7-6, rather than like the
1-0. Apart from forgetting the 7 bit.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, under De Rossi, I mean, we all know that Mourinho's style of play could be quite dour, could be very, very difficult to watch at times. So, I mean, yeah, had he brought this style of play in as well, the like play on the front foot?
It's like night and day, the football they're playing. It's completely different. And I was describing it to someone just earlier in a particular way, and I think this kind of might be the clearest synopsis I can give of it, is with Mourinho, it was like you look to this team and they've got Paulo Dybala up front, who, when he's not injured, is a sensational forward. They've got Romelu Lukaku up front, who has scored a lot of goals, actually in the Europa League specifically, but also in Serie A and the times he's been there. And it was almost like you had that starting point. Pellegrini as well, the club captain, is a very good player behind the attack. And it was almost like Mourinho took that starting point and said, okay, so we've got those players that we can trust to score a goal at some point. I'll just focus on making sure we don't concede any. And it looks like De Rossi's almost turned the proposition on his head and gone, oh, we've got all those good attackers. Why don't we play that way and see what happens? Because defensively, since De Rossi's come in, they haven't looked solid. They're conceding goals, but they're also scoring handfuls. Pellegrini looks completely unlocked. I mean, he's scored, it starts to feel like almost every game since De Rossi's been there. And that's obviously like a romantically nice story, because De Rossi was the Roman-born captain of Roma. Pellegrini is the latest Roman-born captain of Roma, and their connection is something different. But the players really look like they're having fun. Dybala, when he scored at the weekend, ran all the way to the sideline and jumped on top of De Rossi. There's this real warmth to it, which is so different, because, again, you wouldn't have caught players saying a bad word about Mourinho. They liked Mourinho. Mourinho got them to two European finals, and Roma don't really go to European finals. I know they're a big club, but they actually historically really haven't won those trophies. But every game ended with an argument about the referee, with an argument about some decision that didn't go their way, or some complaint with someone being sent off on the sideline. And it does really feel like the mindset has done a complete 180, and now it's like, let's just go and have fun, let's play football.
Then Mercury, can I ask a question? What are they going to be like along the touchline, these two guys? There's a competition along, and then, you know, I mean, over here there's been times where we've been accused of over celebrating. I mean, what's it going to be like? It's going to be some big love hug round.
Is it? It might be. It might be. I did Rossi, honestly, every time I've watched him on the sideline since he got there, he just looks like, do you know when like someone's doing their job and you look at them and you just think that's where you're meant to be? Like he looks like he's meant to be there. Like he looks so in his element, and like, not like he's always grinning, because sometimes he's yelling, sometimes he's giving instructions, but he looks like he's alive, like he's sort of, he's buzzing with it. And I think that that atmosphere is definitely like part of what makes his story there so fun so far.
So does he celebrate like De Zerbi then, like a lunatic?
No, I don't know if he's gone quite that way. De Rossi, if you remember De Rossi as a player, you know, he as a player was very much like a growling, angry. And I think he's not that either on the sideline, but he does sort of roar, you know, he's got his big beard, and the other day when it was absolutely tipping down, he was wearing this ridiculous suit that could never have survived it, and you just see him in the rain shouting and then bear hugging people. He's that sort of energy rather than a sort of a whooping grinning.
The cameras aren't going to be watching the football, are they?
We're not.
They should be. There's going to be some good football played.
There'll be some good football.
And I just actually point out that bearing in mind the player you just mentioned there. Now, obviously, Brighton have got previous with Lukaku. There's probably been several games where Lukaku's played against Brighton and he just hasn't shown up. But then, having said that, he was at the London Cowboys. I'm actually just looking forward to that one-on-one thing of Van Hecker against Lukaku. They're just going to knock seven barrels of water out of each other. I mean, Van Hecker is not backwards in coming forwards. He might have this sort of like cutesy blonde hair. He's got that kind of Germanic look about him. But there's this steely. I mean, he's actually sort of, you know, he's the kind of fellow who would happily throw Erling Haaland to the ground. So Lukaku is just going to be thrown around like a rag doll, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Lukaku, he's big and he doesn't always play like he's big, does he? But he can. Yeah. He he's had a very good connection with Dybala. They make sense as a partnership because Lukaku can be such a he can be a target man when you need him.
Yeah.
And Dybala is so good flitting around and playing off people. But there's a wild card in this mix, which is Tammy Abraham, who's getting close to return from injury as well. I wouldn't be totally shocked if you see him at some point across the two legs, but I don't think he'll be ready to start. But Lukaku and Dybala really have been very effective when they've been on the pitch together. It's mostly been Dybala who's been missing time with injuries, but he's back at the moment and he's looking sharp.
Yeah. But how are the Giallorossi viewing Lukaku now? Because, I mean, when he first came to Roma, there was a lot of, why is he coming here? Obviously, he'd just been at Inter, he'd been at Juve. And his reputation was being a bit of a mercenary. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't think that really put people off in Rome. I think people at Inter were rolling their eyeballs a lot because there was this protracted thing in the summer where Inter thought he was coming back, and of course he was a king at Inter the first time around when he was first there, and he won the league and they made two murals of him outside the stadium, and they felt like he disrespected them in some way by sort of flirting with Juventus and then not signing for them. But in Rome now, I think in Rome has always been this, again, that was still in the mid-Mourinho era, and Mourinho had really sold Roma fans this idea of, I'm going to give you my brand. I'm going to give you the honour of, like, Jose Mourinho can draw these big names to your club. And I know that sounds to people who don't like Mourinho like the most awful, obnoxious thing in the world. But to those fans, they bought into it. They said, yeah, okay, you can bring us Dybala and Lukaku, and we can have these players who we don't expect to sign. And no, he's been reasonably popular in Rome. And again, he scored 9 goals in 22 league appearances, 6 goals in 8 Europa League appearances. He's scored goals.
I guess it's a bit like Arsene Wenger, isn't it? You think, well, hang on, his name is very much like nearly the club that he's at. So, but moving away to and looking forward to the game itself, how is the match itself, or rather the two ties themselves, being viewed by, well, certainly by the Roma faithful, and also by, again, I ask you, the Italian press. How are they looking forward to it, given that, you know, like I say, for probably the most of them, Brighton is an unknown quantity?
I think there's a lot of buzz around this game. I think out of the games, obviously in the Europa League coming into this round, it's the sexy one for the Italian clubs. Like, it is. It's more exciting than...
Well, like anyone from England would have been sexy.
Right. It is. Honestly, like, the Premier League is fascinating to Italian fans. And I do think... I hear this, like, all the time. Whenever Italian fans or even Italian journalists want to complain about something that they think is not good in Italian football, they go, oh, this wouldn't happen in the Premier League. They wouldn't do this. Sometimes when you're living as I do, living in England, spending time in Italy, you do think it's not that sort of utopia you imagine it to be, by the way. But I do think there is a fascination with the Premier League, and there is this sort of desire, I think, as well, to see Italian clubs succeed against the Premier League for that reason, because any time Italian club beats a Premier League team, it's always one in the eye to money, especially when it is not that there's a real case here, because Roma spent a lot on wages and are spending a lot on wages, but especially when it is not Inter, Milan or Juventus, where perhaps you look at them and go, well, they have got enough money.
Can I just say, is what I've seen here, and I think it's one of those things that when you realise actually that the Premier League is probably a little bit too bossy across Europe, is when the likes of AFC Bournemouth, who, you know, who have even less of a history than us, are able to compete and outbid AC Milan for a given player. That's when you realise that, I mean, this is AFC Bournemouth, who have a, like I say, very little history at all, a ground of 11,000. I mean, it's probably like Sassuolo trying to compete with Manchester City, if you're going to look sort of the other way around. So yeah. I get your point that actually the Premier League, it is actually maybe a Leviathan that could do with, you know, sort of taking down a little bit, if only just to give the rest, not to give the rest of Europe a bit of a chance, but, you know, who are Brighton that we're now playing Roma? What I mean is by that is that if we weren't in the Premier League, if we were in Belgium, if we're in France, if we're in Spain, we wouldn't have that opportunity because of the monopoly or duopoly that any given country has. And yet here in England, we've got that opportunity because of the finances. So I'm just wondering, actually.
I think Roma also occupy like an odd space, right? And I think that when English football fans think about Roma, inevitably, again, thinking about, especially because I think everyone on this call is of a generation where we can remember Football Italia and in the 90s. And so,
our good friend Peter Brankley.
There you go.
Normally at the parish.
You can think of Roma being one of the bigger clubs in one of the bigger leagues in Europe at that time. But the fact is still that when you look at Roma's European history, before winning the Europa Conference League under Jose Mourinho, they'd won the Intercity First Cup in 1961. So it's not a club that is used to winning European trophies. In fact, they've only won the league in Italy three times. So they aren't Inter, they aren't Juventus, they aren't Milan.
Remember the 84 European Cup final with Bruce Grobbelaar spaghetti link.
Yes. So. Yeah, they went to the final, they didn't win it, but yes.
But I mean, Monica, you wanted to make a point?
No, I was just going to come back at this, actually, because, you know, you say, I just wondered what the perception was when, you know, like from the fans, when they, where we were like, oh God, who are we going to get? And we were excited. And did they go, oh yeah, great, Brighton? Or did they go, great, Brighton, because we might beat them? Or, I don't know, how was the perception? Is wind hanging on every... And going back to your other point, I'm just going to say, you know, when we got Ajax, you know, there was this thing like we just like died when we were like, oh my God, we're it. That's because I'm old enough to remember Johan Cruyff and thinking they were the best club out. Actually, just look where they were at the time. So names aren't everything, are they? I mean, yeah, but just going back to how did people perceive it in Italy about Brighton?
No, I think they were excited. I think they were excited. I do think De Zerbi is part of the excitement. Genuinely, like it's this sort of fascination. It's a fascination. He's the one who left, and perhaps when he left, there was some sense of
Have to say this, Monica. No Chris Hughton, then there'd be no Roberto De Zerbi.
yeah, and there'd be no.
The past explains the present, doesn't it?
But this is it, though, Nick. I mean, obviously, we're all very, very excited about it because this is our first time in any European competition. It's like, you know, we still remember sitting in the rain at Wifteen and like losing to Rochdale. And now we're playing Ajax and we're playing Roma, and we're, you know, this is exciting. And to get to this stage and get to this to win the group and to have the second leg at home, this is massive for us.
Does the Albion backstory have any resonance with the Roma fans? Do you know, Nikki?
I can't honestly tell you an answer to that on behalf of the Roma fans. I think that there will be, without question, within Roma sport, you'll find the ultras absolutely will have connections with fan base within England. I know the various clubs, they probably don't have strong ties to the Brighton fan base just because Brighton haven't been in Europe. But there will be people wanting to know about that. There are definitely within Italian support, within those ultra groups, particularly people who are very into the history, very into the stories of these things. But fandom in Italy really does encompass a lot of things. Like it encompasses that word ultra, and within ultra can be all sorts of different groups. And then you get the tifosi who are your more, I guess, day-to-day fans. And the level
question, Nikki, just for our experience as a fan going out there, what will we experience with the fan base? I mean, you've just mentioned the ultras. We had such different experience with the three clubs that we played in the first round. Can you give us any kind of sort of sense of what it's going to be like for us?
Yeah, I think people will need to keep their wits about them. I do. I think, unfortunately, there is an element of the ultra groups within Rome who are violent. We've seen that several times. And when you go to certain games like the Derby, it's very pre-planned. You see groups coming, in fact, who aren't Roma fans, coming from abroad to be involved in it. Which is it's a
I feel so thing. Much better now.
But having said
that, you're not going.
Having said that, I do think that of course I don't want to give anyone a false sense of complacency and encourage you on to act in a irresponsible way. But I do think that if you follow the instructions your club gives you about how to get to the stadium, if you don't seek out those areas where the fans are congregating before the game, you're probably going to be fine. I know there's some incidents that happen sometimes in cities and there's always a horror story, but I think in general, if you don't go looking for it, you're probably going to be able
And the club are brilliant, and they looked after us well, Nikki. And I think, you know, most of us are very sensible. And it just made it, to me, when we played Crystal Palace, I thought it was like going to kindergarten. It was like, you know, there's nothing here. It's all there. I mean,
are you bigger than it? Are you talking about the experience?
It's a big, big city. And actually, you know, I've been there on derby weekends, and you'll be at the stadium and outside the stadium, literally fans throwing fireworks at police, that sort of scene. And then you melt into the city and you don't even know anymore, because it's just a city, like it's a big city. So it is absolutely about certain sort of places where things happen, and right outside the stadium, for most Brighton fans, right outside the stadium is probably going to be the bit where you just need to be most, just get on with it, get into the stadium.
But on actually on the pitch then, Nikki, obviously Brighton are going into this. I mean, we've got a crippling injury list at the moment. We're going into this game. We're going to be out without Karim Mitoma. We're going to be out possibly without Pedro, who's been our talisman in this competition. And, you know, it's...
Can you give us good news and say that Roma have got injury problems as well?
They haven't got big ones at the moment, thanks. I'm sorry to say. No, unfortunately for you guys, they haven't. As I said, even if anything, the opposite. Chris Smalling, just been back from a long injury, played at the weekend, played well as well. You had Tammy Abraham, who's back in training. He hasn't been in the team yet, but is expected soon. Dybala for now is healthy. I mean, Paulo Dybala is one of those players who you're always waiting for the next gust of wind to knock him over. And
a great hat trick, though, wasn't it?
But yeah, when he's not injured, he's the best player in that team by some way. He was Serie A's most valuable player at Juventus a couple of seasons ago. And
are you surprised he left Juventus? I mean, it was a weird one, that one.
No, I wasn't surprised because of exactly the conundrum they've run into at Roma. He's only available about half the season. And that's the problem. You're paying full price for a player who you know you won't have half the time. But when he's there, he's
Tarek Lamptey.
He's sorry?
He's Tarek Lamptey.
Nikki, who are they playing at the weekend that we can like get him to pick the...
Monza.
Yeah, it's Monza. Monza away. Monza have been not particularly much of anything this season. They're having one of those mid-table seasons where they haven't really got anything to worry about, but they also haven't really got anything to aim for, so they're a bit of a... Having said that, they beat Milan the other day, so you never know.
Well, you are listening to the Albion Roy on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, the show is brought to you in association with the brilliant old footballshirts.com, and Phil has given us another... I really like this one, Al. Which might give you an idea about what country it's actually from. Well, but I've just said it to you, Nikki, as well. Do you want to have a go at describing this one for me? Have you got any idea who this shirt is?
Is it for me?
Yeah.
It says it's got an Italian logo on it, Sud Radio, could be Italian, South Radio. It's a yellow shirt with a purple collar and like some purple, not Adidas stripes down the side because there's too many of them. I don't recognise it, I have to admit.
It's not Italian, I can tell you that. So,
well, Sud Radio could also be French, couldn't it? So,
that's,
I mean,
true. Lots of countries probably use Sud, don't they, for South?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it's made by Duarig, and I've never heard of that as a shirt maker. I actually love the kind of, well, just the light of this. I love the, it's kind of, I suppose, a sandy coloured yellow and this gorgeous, I suppose. Oh, if you're saying it's not Italian, then fair enough. But this kind of...
It's kind of like a burgundy, isn't it?
Yeah, Fiorentine sort of violet as a trim. I'm going to guess it's I guess that probably the show that we got here... You say it's not Italian, so I'm going to guess it...
No. Phil didn't know who was coming on today.
Oh, I see. In that case, everything screams Italian, but then seeing as my geography is so poor, and say if it's the south of Italy... I would suggest Bari, but in the great scheme of things...
It's not Italian.
Is it French? In which case, I'm going to say some god-awful place on the Côte d'Azur that I've never heard of.
No, you actually, I believe they are still in the Europa League, actually, this team.
Well, sure. I'm trying to know. Go on then.
This is what Phil has to say about this particular lovely shirt. And here is your shirt of the week. It's the 92 to 93 away shirt of French Ligue 1 side Toulouse FC. The original Toulouse FC disbanded in 1967 when they sold its place in the top league and all its players to Red Star Paris. The current Toulouse FC... Yeah, apparently so.
Wow.
The current Toulouse FC was formed 3 years later in 1970. They wore red and yellow jerseys for the first few years and eventually settled on a traditional purple or violet, depending on how you see it, of the original team. The side is nicknamed the Violets after the city of Toulouse's own nickname, the City of Violets. Home is a 33,000 capacity Stadion de Toulouse, the largest multi-purpose stadium in the region. The Violets have yo-yoed a bit over the years. They won the Ligue 2 three times and are the current Coupe de France holders. They've had five parades in Europa Cup and Europa League, and they were knocked out this year. Oh, they were. They are out. They got knocked out in the last round. They got knocked out by Benfica in the last round. In 2007, they made their only appearance in the Champions League, but failed to progress to the group stage. Former player, goalie Fabien Barthez, started his career at Toulouse. Went and played for Marseille, Monaco, Nantes, as well as four seasons at Man United. He also won the World Cup with France in 98. Links to the UK, in addition to Barthez, include Martin Braithwaite, a Denmark international who left Toulouse in 2017 after 140 appearances to play for Middlesbrough between 2017 and 19. Current centre-half, Rasmus Nicholson, played 21 times for Portsmouth. Right-back Serge Aurier spent three seasons with the Violets. And a link to the Albion. Of course, there's one. He gives you the Coca-Cola kid himself. Colin Kazim Richards. Colin signed for us in 2005 after the Coca-Cola competition was won by Albion fan Aaron Berry, former of this parish also. The prize being $250,000.
Before you continue, Nicky, what's tickling you here?
The Colin Kazim Richards link, that's just, it's such a perfectly obscure link to bring in. I was impressed.
Oh, we remember him. It was a moody sod, he was.
He was a good player, though.
It was, yeah, you could see there was something about him, but, you know, with Dean really didn't suit him.
No, well, you know, he was at Bury, so, I mean, that's not exactly...
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's...
I mean, would you rather live in Brighton or Bury?
Or Bury.
Yeah, quite. Sorry, crack on, mate.
But yeah, so obviously he the prize being $250,000 for the club to use on player transfers. After leaving us in 2006, Collins played around 500 league games, representing 17 clubs, including 15 games for Toulouse in 2010. So thank you for that. And of course, you can see that and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. And it's well worth a bit of your time to have a look. I remember entering that competition.
I remember that so many Leeds fans entered it, and because they knew that they were the most prolific sort of entrants of it, they assumed they were going to win it.
They were going to win it, did they?
Yeah. Oh, boy, were they upset. There are fewer things in life than an upset Leeds United fan.
I want to give one before I go, vote a support to Monica, because I couldn't remember my first game, which game it was for ages. But I looked it up in the end because I was like, I think it has to be this. And I was Googling through. So I do know which one it was. But I don't remember the game. I mean, initially, it was a 0-0 draw, but I don't remember my first game.
Well, okay. What was it then?
It was Arsenal 0, Leeds United 0 in 1993.
Thank you very much.
Interesting. So I think it must be the way we're wired.
Okay, and Nicky has now left us, so yeah, just in time for us to talk about the games. We might as well do them all in one hit. They weren't great, were they?
No, they weren't. I mean, there were some good bits, I think. Let's go for the good bit. 400 league games by Dunk, and wasn't that fantastic? And you know, that was just amazing. And then I was thinking about that, 400 league games for Dunk. And then how many managers has he had in that time? Six. What? Managers has he had?
I thought you said marriages. I'm thinking...
that person. Oh, was it?
Actually, if you work backwards...
He started with Gus Poyet. So he then goes from Poyet on to...
Garcia.
Then on to Sammy Hupia. Then Chris Hughton. Graham Potter. There's only six. I mean,
come on. We're talking
6 and 15 years.
And look how he stayed and he's adapted to everything, every one of them, and he's just been dunk. And to have been there at that and to have got that header, I mean, it was just like, that was the best bit for me. Absolutely the best bit for me.
I mean, it was a strange game, though, the Everton game. I've watched the highlights of it again, and we didn't play badly in the game. We had it just seems to be both of the games this week have been a continuation of each other. We had against Everton 23 shots, 7 on target. Against Wolves, we had 18 shots, only 2 on target. We're not being clinical enough in front of goal.
Is that when it comes to the mid-table and lower table teams that we're playing in the Premier League, and it probably hasn't happened too many times that we've been bossed. I think probably Arsenal away and maybe one or two others. But when it comes to playing those teams, we will boss possession. We will go through their midfield like it doesn't exist. And in some cases, it doesn't exist. It's those clubs. And I see this as and I'd like your opinion on this, Monica, but I see this as a major elevation, more so than the fact that we're in Europe, more so that we're 7th or 8th or whatever it might be, that we are considered a club who you must have your wits about you all the time. Otherwise, you can be easily unpicked, to the point that these clubs who have these stellar histories, these very proud and cherished histories, are actually bricking it against us. I mean, is that your take on it?
Absolutely. And both of them did the same, didn't they? We had the Dyche play, and then we had the play last night. And both of them were like, we're afraid of this team. We know they're going to play, so we'll have to do the way that we play. And we'll just block them, and we just won't let them play their way. I mean, what worries me, though, is we know they're going to do that to us. So why don't we do something a little bit different and you know, just change the way we play?
Go on then, Monica De Zerbi. What do you have in mind?
Well, last night I thought, you know, again, that first 2 minutes, and there we were, bang. I thought, oh, no, please, I was at Luton. I can't stand this again. I've just driven all the way up to Wolves and I couldn't see it happening. And then I just thought, why don't we just occasionally do something? And I know we won't do it. It'll have to be watching the other way, but just boot it down just once in a while and just get it down there as we start the game. I mean, there's this bit about being on the back foot. So last night we just saw it again, didn't we? Classic. We were just that bit about, you know, they scored so quickly and there we were, you know.
Well, that was the game over, really. I mean, Wolves' plan would have been to, like, play us on the counter-attack anyway. Soak up the pressure. I mean, unfortunately for us, and it looks like it's going to be for the season, we've lost our lightning rod in Karu Mitoma, who is that one player. I mean, we have got other players that can be unplayable, and actually, I'm going to come onto those in a minute. But I mean, Carew, when he gets that byline and pulls it back, and when he gets, they don't know what he's going to do, and it just creates chaos.
He creates chaos. But I'm trying to think the number of times he'll go past this player on the byline, on the goal line. And it's magic to watch, and it's great to see them sort of humiliatingly dumped on their backside for it. But I'm trying to think of too many occasions, and there's not that many where, by the time he's got there, that he's actually created anything with it. Yeah. The Mitoma, maybe it's our expectation, but the Mitoma of this year hasn't quite hit the heights of the Mitoma last year, possibly because the Mitoma of last year was an unknown quantity and no one knew what they were going to expect from him, and he took the mickey.
Well, I'm going to argue that the last game he played for us this season, which was the Sheffield United game, was his best of the season. And he looked like he was actually back to his brilliant best.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree with that. But
It's very weird. I mean, I don't know whether you guys only know any more has come out today, but I'm really interested to know about this injury that he's got, because, you know, it's transpires. There's nothing to do with having the shit kicked out of him in that game. But this is quite serious. I mean, I don't really want to get into my medical hat, but this sounds really quite serious. You know, a back injury could be anything. And, you know, this guy could have been carrying this for a little while. He said it with De Zerbi, said it was before that game. He then gets that blow. Something serious has happened. We haven't heard what it is. So there's something about him, because he was off. Then he went off, you know, he was off before he went off of his international break. He came back being a bit different. You know, he came back a little bit. He's back to the man that we knew. And now he's got this injury. So, you know, and obviously last night,
that side was just, the first half was just exposed, wasn't it? I mean, I've not seen this young lad Pepe on before. I haven't seen him in the under 21s or whatever. So I hadn't seen him play before, but that side was just like, we didn't have side to be over on that right side last night.
I have seen Perpignan play a couple of times, and I think that he's still a work in progress. I mean, you can't write someone off at 19. That's
I was not doing that.
No, I wasn't saying that. But the point is that as you say, I mean, to all intents and purposes, it was a Premier League game. Of course, it was, you know, the FA Cup, but it was still a Premier League standard game. And he didn't look as though he was being allowed the freedom and the confidence to play how a right winger should. I'm sure it will come. I mean, like I said, we write anyone off at our, and I appreciate you weren't doing that. And I think the Victor Gyökeres is a kind of a cautionary tale.
The one that got away in an old Ostergaard. I mean, he was another one that got away. Ostergaard, remember Ostergaard?
But I mean, I think that, I mean, it was an interesting one that Perpignan did actually start. But I think Lamptey's still not quite 100% a lot of the time.
My psyche is different. Get out there, get him in the bag. You know, I don't like this stuff about playing your lesser team to start off with or your less experience.
That's not what we're saying at all. Basically, I mean, the Zerbi makes 6 or 7 changes every week. It happens. And basically, we've got a big work. Like, we've got this game, we've got this game in midweek. We've got Fulham of the weekend. We've got the big, we've got the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Zerbi would not have gone into the game wanting to lose it. He would put that side out there. And it was good enough to win it. And we created more chances than Wolves. We're just toothless at the moment. And that, hopefully, that will change. But there were so many, I mean, like I said, 18 efforts on goal, only 2 on target. That's the real story, not who was playing at right back.
I know. And there were some great bits. And I mean, you know, on the positive side, the kid, you know, it's not fair to call them kids, is it? But the young gentlemen were played really well last night. I mean, and it was really exciting, wasn't it? Buonanotte, I just think he's got to calm down a bit because he's very, I mean, I love the feistiness, but he's going to get himself into trouble and get sent off. And he's a, but I love it. And Ciso come back. I mean, he's my player that I love. You know, to bits. Last night he was just amazing, and you know, within seconds he'd had 3 fouls, was it, against him? He got 3 kicks. I mean, didn't come to anything. That was brilliant. And then seeing, I've been waiting for Barco because what's he called, El Colado or El Colo or something?
Just Colo.
The redhead, you see, because I'm a redhead, you see. I thought, oh, he was eager, excited. He was just, you know, he just wanted to get on there, didn't he? So, I mean, there were some great things about last night, but. I mean,
is the point. This is when you look at it in context, and you can step away from it. And of course, we're far too emotionally involved in this. And you see this, and incidentally, there's only one thing probably more irritating about the whole score last night, and I was listening to the. Now you didn't have to put up with this, Monica, but us stay at homes had to listen to the BBC Red Button commentary, and it drove me around the twist. It really did. Everything Wolves did that was quite good was skillful. Everything that we did that was quite good was lucky. Maybe there's a consideration for expected to be better. But the point is that, and I still go back to, and I've said this on the Raw several times, let's go back to that Arsenal game towards the end of the last full Potter season. That's the kind of the year zero for where we're at the moment, because that's where we've made our leaps and bounds. And to actually boss games like the way that we do, is kind of the set thing. And now we have this level of expectation. And I have it as well. And I think we all do. And I try to sort of like temper it. And it's not even just thinking, well, think of where we were 2 years ago or think of where we were 25 years ago. No, we are where we are. And we are expecting a certain level of quality. Now, the point is that De Zerbi would not have put out Perpignan if he didn't think that he couldn't do the job.
Absolutely.
The point is that, unfortunately, for whatever reason, and it could have been the balance of the rest of the side. Who knows? But it didn't really happen. And so sort of more experienced people came.
But
AD, I've got to say this because I know that you're champion at this. Give us your lowdown on Barco.
Well, I wasn't actually going to go there, actually. I was actually going to go. Barco did more in 10 minutes than anyone did in the rest of it. But my big takeout from it. Obviously, we lost the game. We're disappointed. The draw, which would have been at home to Coventry, an excellent opportunity to get to Wembley again. You know, it's just disappointing. It was there. We had the chances to do it. But one thing I will take out of it, it was the fact that Julio and CJ came back into this side. He came on against Everton on the weekend. Everton and he looked okay, he was finding his way a little bit. But when he came on last night, he was electric. He hadn't been away at all. And that excites me. And if we have lost Mitoma, it's that X factor that where you with that player, you don't know what's going to happen. And like unlike Carew, Julio will shoot from anywhere. And you know, there's a good chance he will put it where the spiders live again because they're wanting the goal of the season contender.
I mean, I kind of came away and I thought, you know, we won the game, but we lost the match. That was one of the last. I mean, we did actually.
I didn't think this season.
I know. And the other thing I can tell you is going to Wolves. I have a recollection of going to Wolves, and it was a 0-0 draw with Chris Hughton. Do you remember when we were trying to stay up?
Yes.
And I remember walking away from that game and actually being verbally abused by supporters of Wolves, saying how boring we were and how dull we were, and we were absolutely dreadful. And just look how things have changed. So. You know, that's how many years, what, 4 years or...
I'm more concerned, and I did actually have to double check this morning that the Ravens hadn't actually left the tower because we lost the Wolves. This doesn't happen.
No, to be fair, our brilliant record is in the league. Our record in the Cups against Wolves is actually not that good at all.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a couple of other things we've got to get into, particularly in the Everton game. Obviously, We knew how Everton were going to set up. We knew they were going to play with a low block. We knew they were dangerous from set piece. And lo and behold, they scored from a set piece. But I mean, we had so many chances in that game. And I mean, it was like, I mean, Welbeck had a hat trick of chances early on. Dunk had a header straight at Pickford, a dinger fired wide. I mean, like I said, 27. At least we had 7 on target in this game.
Well, there was about five headers from corners in a row. That were all straight at Pickford. I mean, it was. You think, hang on, didn't I just watch that a minute ago?
The two big talking points after, I mean, obviously after their goal was one, the Lamptey clearance off the line from Decore's pile driver, which was just insanely brilliant.
Our big central defender, Lamptey.
But also, the other big talking point was, of course, the red card. Now, Al, for you. How did you see it? Do you think it was? I'm not convinced.
Well, I can see the justification for it being a red card. Now, what's happened in social media is a lot of people have said, hang on, he got a red card for this, but so-and-so didn't. And my point would always be, well, precedence or comparison are neither here nor there. I think a lot of people are citing Harry Maguire for doing something similar and standing on someone's foot. Okay, one's a yellow, one's a red, and that's the nature of football. It's in the opinion of the referee. There isn't a hard and fast one. It's about the opinion and where is the line. And referees, individual referees, because they're human, will have their line as to what should be. I think he was unlucky, but having said that, if the boot was on the other foot or if the boot was on the other leg, I think that we would be screaming for a red card. So in as much as, yes, Gilmore was unlucky... Yes, it wasn't intentional. It's nothing as bad as Holgate's, and yet you get the same sanction. But I can see the case. Let's put it this way. It's one of those where if it had been given a yellow card, it probably wouldn't have been upgraded to a red. It's just one of those...
Well, that's where the rules are asked, though, isn't it?
But the rules always been like that.
Well, for sure. But, I mean, I don't... Obviously, you do see accidental ones, but there's got to be intent. There was no intent. He won the ball, and it was a follow-through. Well,
intent used to be in the laws, and it's not now. That's the point.
It's disappointing.
It's very disappointing. But can I also say that actually, if we rewind to something that was in the news about 3 weeks ago, for me, what it's also done is completely and utterly trashed the idea of sin bins. Because we went down to 10 men and didn't stop playing the way we were doing and got our equaliser. Hang on, where's the advantage in Everton having an extra player if we're then going to go and score a goal? So the notion of going... Sorry, go on, Monica, yeah?
No. I totally agree with you. And actually, you know, who came away with that most disappointed at the end of the day? 1-0 up and 10, we had 10 men. who came away most disappointed? That was Sean Dyche, wasn't it, really, at the end of the day? So
I did enjoy Lewis's interview afterwards, where he said, I knew he was going to Cruyff.
I didn't hear that.
Now, this is one of the reasons. I mean, it's obviously a shame to lose sort of like one of the greats of football at such an early age. But I wonder if Johan Cruyff was still alive, he'd actually say, do you know what? He's done it so many times. I think that people should start calling it the Pascal Gross turn.
Well, no, we've already called it the Pascal Gross Arena in Amsterdam.
Yes, we are. So absolutely.
I'm not quite sure what we're going to be calling the Stadio Olimpico, but...
I think the big thing was, though, last night we did miss Billy. You just do realise what a great player he is. And we missed
at least he's available for Rome.
Yeah, I know. That was a bit of I got for that.
Yeah.
So good. I mean, you've obviously sort of gone on the European tours. Let's go back to, because let's face it, we don't really want to sort of major on the Everton and Wolves games. We've covered the big part. So you've been out to watch the Albion abroad. And for someone who's watched the Albion for 50 years, let's rewind to sort of, I guess, probably maybe this time last year, but certainly the end of the season, and the roar of 30,000 seagulls planning a European tour. And then sort of you go into to the places you're going to. How, as this Brighton fan of long standing years, and we can say the same for ourselves, but of long standing years, does this make you feel?
It is just it is in my heart that this is just cannot honestly be happening, and yet. You know, that first naive game at home that we lost, that we should never have lost at home.
Against Athens, yeah.
Against Athens. After that, we just sort of thought, oh, yeah, we can. And there was this complete change in attitude. And I think by the end of it, and again, going back to what you said earlier, Alan, expectation has grown now, which is like a bit scary, isn't it? But the experience of this has been amazing. And I just have to, you have to pinch yourself, because these are clubs that I grew up. You know, I had the own club for my wall. I mean, he was my hero. I fancied him when I was a kid. You know, sorry, long gone now and whatever. But he was there, and there I was.
Your husband's behind you.
Yeah, well. So he was one of my boys. So, but the thing is, it's just this experience has been amazing. I've met so many wonderful people. I mean, boats, trains, planes, whatever. This travelling for people to get there is incredible. I mean, I'm on the radio and I'm going to explain to everybody. I have my list that goes like toilet paper of every single connotation of every flight I could get, whoever we drew. On that Thursday, I was there and it was going round and round and round, wasn't it? All of us trying to book these wretched flights, and then it says not available because it's gone up and gone up. I mean, it's just incredible. And it has been amazing. And I tell you what, these Albion fans are just terrific, every single one of them.
And you accuse us of being nerds.
You're not the only one. I know a load of people went through exactly the same thing. And it is, I mean, like getting there is becoming like an episode of Race Across the World at the moment. It's
how are you getting there then?
I'm going via Bristol, which is like, but I've got direct flights, but we've paid £600. A day before, they were £39. I mean, this is just, it's outrageous, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely outrageous. But, you know, and then there's all this business of the train strike and everything else, but they're still, and everyone's going. And do you know what happened yesterday? We're on our way to Wolves and we had to all stop to get our tickets sorted out for the game, didn't we? Because that was announced at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So everyone's sort of pulling off and off the motorway, sorting out their tickets and whatever. But, oh, it's just incredible. And we've loved it. And I wouldn't do, I mean, I've saved all my holiday. All my holidays have been football this year. All my money's been spent on football. And I've loved it. And I'd like to do it again, actually.
Then again next year, then?
Yeah, I'll be there. You'll be there, won't you?
Yeah. This time we've been playing teams in Lithuania and Luxembourg. So when you say your holiday, now, one of the things that actually sort of, you know, really flagged you up when I was looking at your posts and your travelogues,
oh, my goodness,
the excessive number of letters after your name. So I think that actually I just remember about 20 odd years ago, the Albion put out this survey to say what people do for a living. And you got to realise that there was this huge, great, big, wide range of skills and vocations and jobs and things that people do. Monica, I'm going to sit you in under the spotlight here and tell our listener how wonderful you are in the medical profession.
Currently, I'm working in research. I've been working in I worked in research during the COVID pandemic. We were looking at the variants and how much that were affecting different people. We were looking at the vaccinations, how effective they were, vaccinations. So I work in epidemiology and data science now. I've had a long career in respiratory, so chest medicine. I still do. And, you know, at meetings, because I'm really quite serious in work, and I know that you guys know that I do have an OBE, which is a bit embarrassing, really, to see you go around. Well, you don't go around at football saying you've got an OBE, do you? I mean,
he's an ordinary bloke from Edmonton. So.
Yeah, no, I'm just a girl from Port Slade, you know. I'm just a girl from Port Slade and there. So anyhow, and I do have lots of recognition. And they do those bits at a meeting and they say, can you tell somebody something that you don't think they will know about you? And, you know, I come up with this bit like I'm an unofficial football correspondent. You know, I'm an Albion fan or whatever. And the people like gobsmacked because they just have an idea that, that's not what professional women do, and it's so just breaking.
What was your OBE for?
Just for services for nursing education. I set up an educational program in Bangladesh. There was a lot of voluntary work went out there, raising money. I run 10 marathons, raised money for, you know, Albion community. And
yeah, just quickly drop that in there.
You know?
Did I just not say, sorry, Monica, did I just not say no modesty? No, just and then I ran 10 marathons in Bangladesh, which was nice. Oh, come on. I can see you now just grinding the coffee at your huge kitchen table, which
I've just realised that isn't actually a load of flight plans. That's a map. She's running to Rome.
She is running to Rome. Yeah.
I will be running in Rome, that's for sure. Because I've given
up. Did I have park runs? Oh, it's basically.
I liken it to a poster, actually. I think this is how she's going to get there. I liken it to a poster, a lovely one. I said, when men aren't looking, women fly.
Wow, oh, yeah, that's lovely, isn't it?
So you got an OBE. So what other letters you got after your name? And I'm not talking about sort of like BBC, ITV, like they have in the Carry On films. Come on, please, no modesty. Tell us about the medical royalty we're talking to.
So I'm a fellow of the European Respiratory Society, and you have to get voted in by your professionals. I'm a fellow of the nursing, the Queen's Nurses Institute, and I've got masters, and I've got BSCs, and I've got postgraduate education certificate in education, and I've got certificates in all sorts of things. But it's a bit, you know, that doesn't matter, does it really? It's just what I do, and I'm pretty good at my job. But
I've got an O level in colouring in.
And he can't even do that very well.
No, I can't even go over the lines. It's, you know, it's
I really do have to say that I'm going back to my history with the Albion, and, you know, so I started with my father. My father loved motorsport and things, but he kind of liked football, but we used to watch it, do the footballs, and you know, he would be a bit interested in all sport. When I was 14, I used to go and stay at my friend's house on a Friday night for a sleepover so that we could creep over to the Goulston Ground the next day and go into the North Stand, well, the Division One at that time. And so it was a completely different. That's when if I'm really honest, my football life started then. But I had to hide it from my parents because, you know, it wasn't the sort of thing you did. And grammar school girl sneaking off to football on a Saturday afternoon was not quite what you did. But anyhow, that was it.
Not in the early 70s. Did you go to the Goulston with a scarf on your wrist and big flared jeans and everything?
I did all of that, and I got crushed behind those posts every minute of it. posts.
So given that, you had the big flared jeans and you had the, you know, the scarf on wrist and the way you say it, it sounds like you ran the firm.
I ran the firm. Well, there were not many ladies there, you know, to be honest with you again. And so I had my Bay City Roller type of Albion flag on my wrist. And I knew all the songs. Didn't sing them quite as loudly as perhaps some of the others. I loved it. I'd go in there. I'd stand right in the middle.
Did you migrate to the North Stand?
I did because I started the chicken run, and then
Because my father didn't go regularly, but there was a neighbour around the corner who went, who was really in, and he was a season ticket on the other side, so not from the chicken side, the chicken run, the opposite side there. So would that have been the west? And then from there, where I just because I didn't really like going with him when I was old enough, the first thing I wanted to do was get into the North Stand because I thought that's where all the fun is.
You look like Lulu.
And no, it's so funny now.
No, you don't.
So funny now because I meet people now and they say I was in the North Stand. I look at them and I think they're about my age and I think, do I know you from those days? But I, you know.
Well, this is it. I mean, I was, I went to the North, I started going to the North Stand on my own from about the age of 11 or 12 in about 1981. So, and then from there, and unless we were actually forced out of the North Stand, and we were a couple of times, I never really went anywhere else. I remember sort of like getting soaked when the North Stand didn't have a roof. I remember being excited when the roof was put on there and so on. I just want to get back to sort of like the fact that we have probably one of the most sort of decorated and lauded sort of Albion fans that we can have, someone who's at the top of their game in the world of medicine or in the world of respiratory research. Has there ever been a time where those two worlds have collided, where your professional and Albion supported life have ever, you know, sort of crashed together?
Do you know, that's really interesting you should say that, because this is fascinating. I was involved with something called the European Respiratory Society, and every year we had to award an award for something to do with respiratory medicine that wasn't actually medicine. And when I was responsible for this, we actually awarded Barcelona Football Club the award. And that was because they became the first club in Spain to go no smoking. Now, you can imagine as a members club, this was quite a big thing to do. So it wasn't just like the people say, right, you're not going to smoke here. And if you'd been to Spain, and in those days, you know, like smoking was everywhere, yeah, they had to consult with the members. So they consulted with the members, i.e. the people who go there, and they agreed that it would become a no smoking stand, a stadium. But in return, what they did was, they actually produced these fantastic videos, and without even, I mean, I know they did think through it, but they had like in Messi talking about, you know, how much better their health would be. They had the director of finance talking about how much money they would save. They had the chef talking about, you know, how much more they would taste their food, etc. And it became a big health promotional thing. And then we started to evaluate the stopping smoking rate and actually dropping, you know, the smoking rates dropped. So it was just an incredible study to show, you know, get out amongst the people, get the right influences, and you can change behaviours. So I then played that back, and I said to the at the Amex to at the time, just tried to think who I was talking to at the time. Actually, it was no, it might have been Paul Barber's team, but anyhow, I wrote into them and said, you know, this is what we've done. How about, you know, running something like this? And they played the film before one of the matches. And I got invited up into the lounge, and I had all the oi polloi and all the flash food and everything else. But it's just amazing. So, I mean, I love the stuff that, you know, they do about prostate cancer and other things. And I just think, you know, this is where the two worlds can collide. And think about, you know, you've got a captive audience there. You've got a lot of people that would never go and seek healthcare. And here's an opportunity where two things can actually merge together. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and then, At the annual society meeting, we invited Barcelona Football Club to come along, and unfortunately, we just got the medical director. I was hoping I was going to get, you know.
You'd have got Pep Guardiola at the time, yeah.
And do you know what? That's another thing. We were at the New Camp, again, through a connection through the medical fraternity, at Pep Guardiola's last game. How about that? And it was just serendipitous. I mean, it was a 5-0 win, and Messi got 5 goals, and they tossed him up on a big,
right,
and you know, a big one of those, you know, like a trampoline-y thing, that threw him up on the air and whatever. And it was amazing. And we were there on his very last game, and it was just incredible. So lucky, aren't we, really?
But obviously, like I say, you've been watching the Albion, you've been watching football for the last 50 years. What does that kind of that crossed path of football and community mean to you?
I think the camaraderie is just amazing. And I think the bonding that's happened through this Europa League experience has been even bigger than anything else I've ever experienced. And, you know, people go to football for different reasons. And I do think there is, you know, some people are absolutely attentive to every single, you know, how many times someone's touched the ball and da 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 da. Some people just love the gestalt of it, the whole thing, the big, you know, the big result, the whole experience of what's happened. But there's also this bit about the crowd and the people. Now, I know everybody. You can imagine by the type of my personality. I know everybody around me. I know their names. I know their, my wife's names. I know their kids' names. My husband sits next to somebody. He probably doesn't even know his name. And I think there is something quite different about this whole thing about how you interrelate. So, one, I love that camaraderie. Meeting people last night when I went to Wolves, I'd seen, you know, they recognised me and I'd recognised them. I'd seen it. Last time I saw you was in Athens. You know, I mean, it sounds preposterous, doesn't it? But there is something. Oh, how are you going to get there this time? Or what are you doing? Oh my goodness, you know. And it's lovely. So that bit, and I do think, you know, I'm lucky enough. I've got a great family. I've got friends outside of football. But for some people, this is their life, and I don't think we can underestimate how important football really is. And I will say this and call it out, it's not just for men, but I think there is an opportunity for men to let out some of their emotions, to talk to their mates and have some time to do this. And equally now, with more and more women going, there's an opportunity for women to have that experience too. So, that sense. And I think people who don't go to football don't understand that. And I think there's still obviously this feeling that football isn't for me and whatever. And that reaching out at home, you know, the work that you guys are doing on this programme and the fantastic work they do through Radio Sussex and other programmes, you know, there's a lot of lonely people at home. They're still part of this family. And I think, you know, we can't underestimate the fantastic work that you guys are doing and everybody else by bringing this every week into people's homes. So just like to call you guys out, really, and thank you. And you're doing a brilliant job. As do our mates on Radio Sussex too.
That was absolutely lovely. That was Aidan.
Okay, and that is all we've got time for this week. So thank you so much to Nikki Bandini. Thank you to Monica Fletcher. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Eddie Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. See you later. Bye.
Silent angel, go to sleep.